Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Mark Thurston, and we're going to be discussing the new book, or the second edition book, Rediscovering Your Soul's Purpose, The Edgar Cayce Way. This new edition is a classic the classic guide to using spiritual and psychological insights of the renowned mystic and psychic Edgar Cayce to find your authentic mission in life. Edgar Cayce, who lived from 1877 to 1945, left the world a wealth of intuitive readings on everything from health and spirituality to psychology and past lives. Now, the most significant teacher of Cayce's teachings, Mark Thurston, updates and revises his classic book. To help you use Cayce teachings in the 21st century and to guide you to greater purpose in your relationships, career, and overall mission in life. Dr. Mark Thurston is an educator, psychologist, and author of more than 19 books about personal spirituality, dream psychology, meditation, and mind and body well-being. He worked for ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and the Atlantic University in Virginia Beach, Virginia, for 36 years. In 2009, he moved into a new phase of his own soul's purpose, becoming the director of educational programs for George Mason University's Center for the Advancement of Well-Being. You can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.markthurston.com, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Mark to the show. Good day, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It is my pleasure. I am an Edgar Cayce fan. I've only been to ARE once, and that was on 11/11/11. I thought on that particular day I had to do something very special, and ARE was the place I wanted to go. But that's
great.
An amazing facility.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you for making that trip.
Sure. Now, I think it would be great. I mean, you've been working with the Edgar Cayce teachings, information for decades. So how and when did you first become interested in Edgar Cayce?
Well, I got interested in Cayce's material when I was a senior in high school. I was very interested in math and science and was sort of thinking I would have a career in physics. And I saw Edgar Cayce's son, Hugh Lynn, and Jess Stern on the Mike Douglas TV talk show talking about this bestseller book, The Sleeping Prophet. And it so intrigued me. I went and got a copy of it and read that book and found out there were a lot of other books that had already been published about his work. And that led to a strong interest in the material, especially during college, trips to Virginia Beach during the summer and at the holiday time. And after I graduated from college, I moved to Virginia Beach and was lucky enough to get a job there, paid for a little bit for graduate school, but was connected for 3.5 decades as a staff member there before taking this new job as a faculty member teaching college students about some of these topics like meaning and mindfulness.
Yeah, and it seems very interesting that right now in your new role that you are interacting with people who were at the very age you were when you became interested. It's interesting. It seems that at that particular age, there is a heightened interest in trying to understand one's purpose. I mean, you, when you're going through college, it's like, okay, where do I go? What do I major in? What's my life going to be? I mean, it seems like it's a natural environment for questioning.
I agree. I think when we're at a turning point in life, we're really open to questions about purpose and meaning and values. And, you know, being 19 to 22 years old is a turning point for lots and lots of people. And there are other turnings that happen in the course of a lifetime. And that, I think those are windows of opportunity for reassessing and recommitting to a sense of purposefulness.
Yeah, very much. So now this book is, like I mentioned in the introduction, a second edition for your first release, which was, gosh, but more than 30 years ago. So
right.
What led you to do this edition? Why this? Why now?
Yeah. Well, I felt like I had something more to say on this topic after 30 years. I think it was a little bit wiser, maybe, writing this second edition. I'd also had considerable experience doing one-day workshops on this topic and multiple-day conferences, and especially, I think, in the last 9 years, working with young adults on these themes made me feel like I had something further to say on the topic.
So with this this new information, I mean, do you feel that, you know, like over the last 30 years that there has been an increase in people's questioning about purpose? I mean, I don't remember, you know, decades ago there being such a prominent interest, you know, in discussion. It just seems to be much more in the forefront now.
I guess I think that the longing to have meaning and happiness is kind of a universal, and it's somewhat timeless. I think it takes on different flavors in different time periods. And there's so much uncertainty in our world right now that I think there's more of an impulse to find a sense of groundedness inside oneself because things externally seem so shaky and unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's the one thing, and when it comes to purpose and happiness, it's just one of those areas that I think that, I mean, like you say, it's kind of been a timeless type of yearning, you know, that people have.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it seems that the Casey information itself is timeless. I mean, it's one of those areas. When I was at the center, I was able to, you know, you're able to kind of look at and read some of the readings that he gave, and it just seemed that what he was talking about back in the, you know, 30s, 20s, and 30s is so relevant now. I mean, it just seems, and then in one way, it's like, okay, haven't we progressed, you know? But it does seem that the topics are, again, timeless.
I think Casey's material is one expression of what's been called a perennial philosophy. And he's largely expressing it in Western terms with a Judeo-Christian orientation. I think we ought to remember that the readings were generally given during a pretty traumatic time in American history, the Depression, World War II. And so even though we have uncertainties in our own times, those were also shaky times as well. There were a lot of people coming with questions to him about how they could make it financially, economically, in their career. And so we're kind of revisiting some of those same themes in our own era.
Yeah. Now the book title starts with the word discovering. So to me, that seems to indicate, you know, the idea of there is something already in existence that is maybe hidden and needs to be uncovered. Was that intentional to when it comes to talking about one's soul's purpose?
Well, I agree that the first word of the title of the book is maybe the most important word, and the discovery process implies that there's something already pre-existent or written within us that we can find. I think it's equally important that I use the ing form of the word, discovering, rather than discover, I think if it's just been discover your soul's purpose, it would imply that's just kind of something we do once and we've done it. And discovering is meant to imply this is an ongoing process. This is a lifelong inquiry. There's lots of nuances to our life purpose. There's new expressions of it. And these are sort of exercises that we need to revisit multiple times in the course of a lifetime.
Yeah. So do we have one soul purpose, or are there multiple purposes? You know, because the idea of discovering, you know, in that lifelong process, like you mentioned, I'm just curious as to, you know, in his material or just in your work, if you've come to any kind of understanding whether or not there's a singular purpose individually, or whether there's multiple that we experience.
Well, the analogy that I like to use, because I get that question fairly often, an analogy I like is to imagine that everybody has a coin in their pocket, and that coin on one side is the same for everybody, and the other side of the coin is unique to the individual. Now, the side of the coin that we share in common was articulated by Edgar Cayce as to bring the infinite into the finite, that everybody's purpose in life is to bring the qualities of spirit into individual material expression. So we're all here to bring love into the earth, or inspiration into the earth, to come back to the theme of your show. And yet all of us, I think, long for a more specific sense of how we're meant to do that ourselves. And so when Edgar Cayce would give spiritual advice and counsel to somebody seeking meaning, he would usually frame this as a thematic sentence that would key into core talents and gifts and strengths that individual had as a soul that could be used in a very particular way in service to other people. Now, he didn't limit it to an occupation. It wasn't like he said, you're supposed to be a butcher or you're a candlestick maker or what have you. It was more thematic. So like one woman was told that her soul's purpose was to help people through the difficult transition points in life. And I think we can imagine how she could do that occupationally, maybe in different ways at different points in her life, but she could also do that just as a way of being with family and friends or volunteer work in her community. Was something more than just a job by which she was going to earn her living.
Okay. Yeah. In the book, you also cited an example of a gentleman that went to Cayce, and he was an accountant. You know, and the idea of him, his soul's purpose as kind of communicating the sacred nature of numbers, and he listed several different possibilities.
I really love that story.
To me that one was great because it number one, it identifies a central theme, but again it kind of highlighted just so many different expressions that could take.
Yeah, if I could just summarize that story for the listeners, this was in 1929. It was an example of where somebody traveled at some, made some real efforts and came from New England on the train, came to Virginia Beach so he could be present in the room with Edgar Cayce to get his reading, whereas most people got them at a distance and simply received through the mail a typed transcript of the reading. But he came, and he was told in his reading a number of different gifts and talents and strengths that he had. Some of them were linked to past lives. Others were described in terms of astrological, planetary influences, statement for his life purpose, to be somebody that will demonstrate the spiritual or sacred energy that exists through and behind numbers or sort of mathematics. And then he's told several different ways in which he might live this in an occupational way, being an aeronautical engineer, being a professional astrologer. I mean, he's given lots of options. It's not like he was pinned down to just a certain job to fulfill his soul's purpose. And I think we need to remember that's not the totality of the purpose of life. I mean, he still needed to take out the trash and balance his checkbook and be a responsible citizen. But this is something that was going to bring joy and a sense of meaning and fulfillment to his soul if he would take up this theme and create within its structure.
Yeah, I really liked that one. And, you know, speaking of, you know, having to do things like take out the trash, balance the checkbook, one of the things that seemed, you know, real significant, you know, when I was going through and reading the book and learning about Casey is just that no one is, that everyone is important. No matter what your role in life, you know, that you have a purpose and it is significant. No matter, you don't have to do great things, you know, to great numbers in order to fulfill that purpose.
That's really a key theme in the overall Casey philosophy. That, you know, it's in the ordinariness of life that we frequently are fulfilling what we're really called to be about doing. And we're so swayed by mainstream media these days, you know, that tell us we need to do something of notoriety to feel like we're worth anything. And if we do that, then it's just a privileged few that have any hope of fulfilling a purpose. I'm really taken by some of the modern social science research, both around meaning and around happiness. It suggests that actually the American culture doesn't rank very high on cultivating and exhibiting a happy life or a meaningful life. And that many countries that we would call developing countries, maybe that meaning and happiness come more naturally for them.
Yeah, that was when I was going through and reading the one section in the book about meaning. You know, that there was the, you know, the age old, what is the meaning of life? And then about living a meaningful life. So, I mean, it was kind of like in one sense, what the meaning of life is this, you know, what's the purpose? But the other one is living a meaningful life is exactly that sense of fulfillment and happiness. And it seems that, you know, so many times we're focused on, you know, what is the meaning of life? And when in reality, our daily activities and expressions should focus on being meaningful and happy in all of our activities.
I think that's a lovely summary. And one of the things I try to do in the book is bring in some parallel systems of thought. I think it gives some context to the Casey material. It also corroborates some of the principles that we find there. And Viktor Frankl's work, I think, is a good example of this. I tried to feature logotherapy, and I'm not sure whether your listeners are familiar with Frankl. He's been a somewhat forgotten figure in the last 15 and 20 years. But he developed this psychological system called logotherapy that's based on the will to meaning in our lives. He says rather than the will to pleasure or the will to power, we need to recognize that it's a drive within us to have meaning in our lives. It's really the central thrust. And Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. Most all the members of his family died, and not out of his having survived that, he developed this system of thought. One of the things he asks us to consider is not what we should expect of life, but what life expects of us. He kind of turns the question around. And then he says that we can find meaning in three categories in particular. One is through our deeds and accomplishments, by creating something, by doing something in the world that's purposeful and serves the greater good. We can also find meaning in our love relationships and how we try to bring compassion and caring and service to our interpersonal relationships. And the third place he says we find meaning is in meeting adversity and even suffering with courage and with open-heartedness. So I think if we think of those three categories as places where our soul's purpose can be fulfilled, it illustrates that it's really within the reach of all of us to find this kind of joy and this kind of purposeful way of living our lives.
Yeah, very much. Now, speaking of deeds and accomplishments, in the book, there's one area that you talk about discovering your soul's purpose is more about being than doing. And you know, I think a lot of people have maybe heard the idea of, you know, to be more than to do.
Right.
So can you explain a little bit about that? Because, I mean, obviously we, you know, it's through deeds and accomplishments. This is one of the ways that it can happen. So in one sense, that's a doing. Can you maybe give some clarity to that idea?
Let me try to frame that distinction in the context of this five-step template that I found in the KC Life readings. It sort of forms the basis of the exercises that I lead people through in the Discovering Your Soul's Purpose book. So there were 1,919 people who got these life readings from Edgar Cayce, roughly between 1925 and 1944. And I've read almost all of them. And what I was looking for was sort of a system or a pattern that he seemed to follow as he was giving this counsel and this advice. And what I see is a five-stage sequence that we can replicate as a self-inquiry. So it begins with kind of focusing on the quality of being, and then it slowly moves over into aspects of doing. So he says the first thing we have to accomplish on this process of discovering our soul's purpose is to clarify a personal spiritual ideal. We need something that's a moral compass. We need something that's a foundation for our sense of self. And he recommends that we look deeply inside of ourselves, that we pray about this, that we meditate on it, that we watch our dreams for clues, and we try to identify some spiritual qualities that for us are essential. You know, so for me it might be qualities like understanding and patience. It's going to be different for different people. But we want to be able to, in a small number of words, commit to some kind of a spiritual ideal. And the first part of someone's life reading was kind of coaching them in that direction. What do you really believe in? What are your core values? Then he would move into a second phase of the life reading where he would help the individual identify their central assets as a soul, their strengths, their gifts, their aptitudes, their skills. And for most people, he would identify four or five or six of these. Now, in the book, I've tried to create some exercises that I've used in my workshops to help people decide for themselves what their most essential talents and skills and aptitudes are. Then the third phase, or the third part of the template, is to actually craft or shape the first draft of a mission statement. And that may sound like a big jump, but I've got some exercises that I think can help people write the first draft of a mission statement that would make use of these core talents and skills and strengths in service to humanity or the greater good, sort of as a kind of mission theme. Then with step four, we really get to the doing part, because it's not enough just to have a lovely statement that we can embroider or calligraphy frame for ourselves. We got to then do something with it. We got to bring it into application. Here's where the doing comes in. What are some practical ways that I can live this mission in the next month, in the next 3 months? Maybe some baby steps, some specific ways of putting it into application. Now, those are going to change over the months and over the years. There's always going to be some next for living the purpose. There's always going to be some next new creative way to give expression to that soul purpose statement. Now, the last part of the template is to watch for signposts that Cayce said are indicative of somebody who's successfully living his or her purpose. And if we don't have those signposts happening in life, then we really got to go back to step three or maybe even back to step two and sort of rethink and recalibrate and work through this discovery process afresh. Now, I mentioned joyfulness. That's one of the signposts he said would happen in somebody's life when they're actually living the being and the doing phases of soul purpose. Another is synchronistic guidance that comes to you to help you find your next ally for your purpose, or to discover the physical material resources you need, including money, to be able to take the next step. But there would be these little come to you to reinforce this.
Wow. Okay. That's a five-step process. You know, really does clarify the being to doing. So that, I mean, it's really easy to then to, you know, to recognize the distinction by going through that process.
So Robert, that was my long elevator speech for what the book's all about. we got on a 140-story building elevator, but on the way up, that was my 3-minute synopsis of the book.
That's all right. We can go up another 100 stories if you want. Well, you know, that's, I mean, I love that distinction, because it, you know, again, it really clarifies the different states of being and doing. Now, the one thing, you know, you mentioned about crafting like a first draft of a mission statement. Would that be then like a reflection of a life purpose? I mean, is that kind of...
Right, that's a first draft of a soul's purpose statement, in the way that Edgar Cayce tended to frame a soul's purpose, where it was broader than just an occupational aspiration.
Okay. Now, with regard to signposts, you know, you indicated that, you know, positive signposts, you know, that were kind of on track would be joyfulness and synchronicity. Would there also be signposts that are kind of like wrong way, turn around, go back?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. I think we need to, first of all, have some faith in the process and not give up the first time there's an obstacle. So in the fourth step of this five-step template, once we've got a first draft mission statement, we're kind of crafting a plan for the next 90 days or the next month or what have you, some baby steps in applying the mission. I think if we aren't having some things that flop or some apparent failures, then we're probably not stretching ourselves enough. So a person needs to, you know, challenge themselves. Be willing to put themselves out there, knowing that maybe everything they try isn't going to fall into place. On the other hand, I think when we continually find that our energy is being drained, or we're just not finding our allies or our community for being able to live this purpose, we either need to go back and maybe recalibrate the wording of the mission statement itself, or to reconsider the approach we're using in trying to live it. So, I mean, if we go back to the example of the woman who was told by Edgar Cayce that her gift, her calling, was to help people through the difficult transitions in life. And maybe she's trying to get a graduate degree as a social worker so she can be out there who are going through tough times, and she just isn't able to get accepted into a graduate program. So does she give up on that soul's purpose statement? Or does she ask herself, okay, maybe it's not right now through my job that I'm going to be doing this. I need to look for other places in my life where in a non-occupational way I could try living this sense of purposefulness.
Okay. I mean, it's, you know, when I was thinking about the signposts as you were talking about it, I just had the sense of like a GPS, you know, as making a quote a wrong turn and having that recalibrate, you know, to kind of get back on the path. And you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes it's those obstacles or hindrances or the things that seem to go wrong that really kind of serve the purpose of putting us back on path. And sometimes we might be on path and really not know that we're, you know, other than that joyful synchronicity, we might not recognize that, you know, we're straying a little bit from course.
Yeah. I think the Viktor Frankl example in the concentration camp is sort of an extreme example. it was difficult for him, we might think, to be living his soul's purpose while he's in a Nazi concentration camp. And yet he decided he was going to find something meaningful in every day in terms of how he interacted with the fellow prisoners, even with the guards. Out of that suffering really came a system of thought and a kind of courageous life that has inspired millions of people since then. Sometimes it's hard to see that when we're in the midst of it. And sometimes in retrospect, we see what an opportunity there was.
Yeah, you know, and that's the one thing. I mean, I've done probably about 1,200 shows over the last 6 years, and I've had so many people who are authors or subject matter experts who really recognize that a challenge or an obstacle or maybe a disease that they had to confront were really key, I guess one of those key turning points, you know, in life that kind of helped clarify, you know, what they were meant to do.
One of the terms, resilience, that's become more prominent, I think is relevant here. We need a certain measure of resilience to be successful with our soul's purpose. And I think social science research and medical science has been particularly interested in resilience in the last few years as there's been more and more evidence of how intractable PTSD can be. But even if we haven't, you know, been a soldier coming back from war trauma or been through, you know, some type of horrific traumatic episode, we all, to be successful, the statistics around people who enter into helping professions and how short-lived some of those careers are is really kind of scary. I have a lot of my undergraduate students who are preparing to be public school teachers, and it's really out of a sense of calling for most of them. They really feel like this is their mission. And yet the average new teacher lasts about 3 years if he or she isn't equipped with some self-care strategies and capacity to build resilience. I think almost anybody who has an occupation or an avocation that involves helping others is vulnerable to compassion fatigue and burnout. And we really need to find ways to foster resilience for us to sustain a life purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break, Mark, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Mark any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And then when we get back, Mark, kind of speaking of service and the public teaching, one of the things that it seems to be very important in some of the KC teachings is service to others, you know. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about that when we come back and what his perspective is on that and, you know, exactly how does that fit into one's purpose, okay?
Very good.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Mark Thurston, and we are talking about his book, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, Finding Your Path in Life, Work, and Personal Mission, The Edgar Cayce Way. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is markthurston.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Mark.
Good.
Great. Okay, so service to others. That seemed to be a big part of, it seems, of everyone's purpose.
Yeah, and it's certainly a central aspect of Edgar Cayce's spiritual philosophy. I remember as a freshman in college, I'd just been reading maybe for a year books about Edgar Cayce, and I was so excited. I was in an ARE study group learning to meditate and so forth every week, and Hewlin Cayce came to Houston, Texas, where I was a freshman in college, and he was going to give a public talk. There were about 200 people that arrived, and the thing I remember most vividly from first hearing Edgar Cayce's son give a lecture was that he said, "None of us are going anywhere until we all go together." And he was talking about human destiny and souls and reincarnation and humanity's evolution. But I remember as an 18-year-old being very annoyed to hear that, because I was impatient for spiritual growth. I was going to make this my last lifetime. And I could clearly see there were a lot of people dragging their feet. And the notion that none of us were going anywhere till we all go together really rubbed me the wrong way. But over the decades, I have come to appreciate more of life and the way in which we really are part of a human family. And I think all of us, as part of our mission, involves doing something, contributing with our gifts and talents in a way that will be joyful to the well-being of others. We can't fix other people. We can't straighten them out. We can't live their purpose for them, even members of our family. But at the same time, we can be responsible to others, even if we're not responsible for them.
Yeah. You know, that was, and I'm with you about, you know, not wanting to come back. It's like, hey, I want to be done with this. You know, this is good. I'm happy, but let's be done. You know, I can understand, like you say, that interconnectedness aspect, and can see the, you know, how that really kind of fits in the sense of all moving forward, you know, at the same time. The one thing that I also, there was one statement in the book too that just kind of popped out at me, and it was to express meaning in one's life in such a way that other people are uplifted by one's own way of being in the world. To me, that was it seems that inspirational aspect of living one's life and being and having it uplift others is really kind of a definition of a successful life.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're highlighting that. And the word inspiration is such a great term, isn't it? I mean, you obviously believe that in the way that. And we've all been inspired by others. We've all had people who've been teachers and inspirational figures to ourselves. And then the opportunity to be that to others. And sometimes we don't know when we're being that way. We're just trying to live our lives in an authentic, wholehearted way, and we might be surprised the way and who.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I first started the show, I really didn't know what to expect, and, you know, even who was listening, you know, whether or not, you know, whether the podcast was being, you know, downloaded and listened at all. And then there was anybody else there. Yeah, hello. I'm having an echo kind of come back at me. But there was one point, probably 6 months, you know, into it, and I was up to that point. I was obsessed with looking at numbers. You know, we get statistics on how many listen and all that kind of stuff. So I was kind of obsessed with, oh man, I hardly had anybody listen. Oh yay, someone listened. You know, a lot of people listened to that one. But there was at one point one show that I did that I wasn't even going to do? I mean, the woman, her book was about how she found her spiritual path by marrying a sociopath, you know, and it's like, whoa, you know, it's like, do I really want to do this? And,
yeah.
And but I did it. I mean, I was just one of those gut feelings, like, yeah, I need to do that. Maybe there'll be somebody who could benefit from it. And that was one that I had the most feedback on how much it helped. And so it was like at that point,
wow.
It's like, okay,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So it was like, okay, so, you know, as far as numbers, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, that was when I shifted away from number emphasis to just topics and you know, and helping. But
oh,
that's
I want
true.
To tell
you
and your listeners a similar story from the Casey archives. This was actually after Edgar Casey had passed away. And here's his son, Hugh Lynn, who came back from World War II. Both his parents had died while he was overseas in the Army. And he's got all these readings, all these transcripts. What is he going to do with this organization? And he began to go out and do lectures. And he was doing a lecture one night. A friend of the ARE had set this up in a lecture hall. Only two people showed up. So he decides to go ahead and do the lecture, and he said that one of the two people sitting there on the front row quickly fell asleep and slept through his whole lecture, but he went ahead and gave the lecture. And when the talk was over, this man woke up. He came up to him, and he said, I just want you to know how much I admire your father's work. I own a chain of many, many hotels all over the state, and he said, I'm going to put a copy of Edgar Casey's biography, There is a River, in every single room of every one of my hotels. And, you know, if Hugh Lynn had said, oh, my gosh, there's only two people here, we're not even going to do this talk tonight, that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, that's the one thing. And, you know, when you think about it, if the idea is to, you know, inspire and uplift others through your actions, it's, you just never know who's looking. I mean,
yeah.
You know, let alone listening, you know. But so that's, I think, the idea of living a life of service, you know, being positive, joyful, helpful, you know, those kinds of things, as just being a beacon, you know, of good, then, I mean, it just kind of ripples out. And it really doesn't matter who or how many, you know, are affected, but just the fact that an effect is felt.
Yeah, the ripple effect is so important. And if there's some finding that has come out of ESP research, out of parapsychology, that I think is most significant, it's simply how interconnected human minds are, or maybe the minds of all beings, not just humans. And so it's not so much a matter of reading somebody's mind or being able to predict the future, but just recognizing that our consciousness is interconnected with the consciousness of others, and is we find a way to have greater hope or to have greater joy. It's, you know, subtly but powerfully influencing the minds of other people.
Yeah, very much. Now, there was one area in the book that I kind of want to talk about, because it kind of is a reflection of our 21st century environment. And it was in the area of talking about some common hindrances to discovering one's soul's purpose. And I mean, it talked about childhood education. I want to kind of have you talk in a little detail, but also mechanization, which is right there in our life big time, and busyness. I mean, that is something that is just in the forefront. And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, how each of those areas contributes or would be a hindrance or a potential obstacle to discovering one's soul's purpose?
Sure. Well, let's start with the mechanization one. I was on another show last night, and this came up. In many ways, machines are liberating us to have more free time and energy and creativity in our lives if we'll take that opportunity. But in other ways, mechanization is actually eroding our capacity for free will. And our capacity to sort of have efficacy in a sense of I can do things in my life when a machine's just taking the place of our effort. So I think we need to be really careful about technology and continually ask ourselves, is this really serving me or am I serving it? So, you know, our smartphones are probably one of the best examples of this. Are we using internet technology and interconnectedness to wake up, or are we using it to sort of fall asleep and be controlled by information technology? Let's see, remind me what the other two were. I got to kind of go off on the mechanization.
And as far as mechanization, I mean, you know, the idea to we just lose so much of that human touch, that human interaction, you know, and it's, to me it seems that, you know, that is a vital part of being connected. You know, I mean, you can be connected as, I mean, I have lots of friends on Facebook, but I really have a lot of friends? You know, how many friends do I talk to? How many people do I interact with? You know, to me, it's you know, that human touch and that human interaction, talking, being with, those kinds of things are critical. That, you know, because it's just there's just something about that play back and forth that can keep you on your toes, keep you guided, keep you informed. So anyway, that's, in one sense, that's why I think, you know, where mechanization is kind of dampening the effort on interconnectedness.
Yeah. And then childhood education was another one.
Childhood education, right.
Yeah, in the way in which we're kind of driven towards norms and sort of innovation and the uniqueness of each child. I think it's passed over or not honored as deeply as perhaps we should. So, I mean, that's a call to alertness around how our children and our grandchildren are being raised. And there's not much we can do about our own childhood if we're already grown up, unless we want to kind of revisit what some of those memories were and ask, okay, where was I steered into doing things the way everybody else was doing them? And there was some impulse in me to be different or to be creative. And can I go back and revisit that and give that a chance as an adult when I didn't have a chance as a child?
Yeah, that's you know, that was the one thing, you know, as far as conforming, you know, and kind of putting the damper on the uniqueness and individuality. And then the last one was busyness. You know, I mean, it's the idea of multitasking is being the ideal, to be able to master that.
Oh, sometimes we even wear it as a red badge of courage, so to speak. I'm busier than you, so I must be doing my life purpose more than you're doing yours. And that's really an illusion if we fall into that kind of thinking. In many ways, our busyness keeps us asleep. Casey talks about how the faculties of the soul tend to fall into slumber, that we really are walking around through life with our eyes open, but there's a kind of spiritual slumber that takes place. And probably nothing keeps us asleep in that regard more than busyness. In some ways, to meditate, to drop our busyness. And we all experience this kind of as a monkey mind when we sit down and try to have some silence or some quiet, and it takes practice. But dropping our busyness with a mindfulness practice, I think, is really crucial, both to be able to tune in and know what our life purpose is, but then to be able to live it.
Yeah, that monkey mind can keep you up all hours of the night. And you know, that's just the one thing. I really think that it would be beneficial to have a shift away from that, to recognize that, to not make it as a, like you say, a badge of honor, you know, to how busy we are, and because it's just being silent and having the quiet time. To me, is valuable. I mean, I make sure I have it. You know, it's just one of those things where every now and then I'll get wrapped up in the busy, you know, having a to-do list too long and trying to get it all done. So,
I try to get my university students to even have 3 to 5 minutes a day. A lot of them are working 20, 30 hours a week, full-time students.
Uh-huh.
commuting in the suburbs and the traffic of Washington, D.C. area. And I say, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, it'll transform your life if you'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny when to think that they might have qualms with 3 to 5 minutes. It's like, okay, you know, that's just a little bit less Facebook time, you know, that you can
right,
go ahead
right,
and do
yeah.
that. Well, we're getting down to the end of the show, but there's one other area that I kind of wanted to touch on that's covered in the book that I think a lot of people would, you know, be interested in, and that is the idea of money and resources, of having money and resources to fulfill a life purpose. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because some people, like you mentioned about the public school teachers, you know, it would be a calling, you know, but it certainly isn't a high paying, you know, job,
right.
you know, for them.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about maybe what, you know, the Casey readings or your perspective and your work is
yeah.
regarding that?
So one of the things I try to feature in one of the chapters of the book is Casey's teachings about the law of abundance. And abundance is more than just money, and so I think if we're going to explore money, we need to do it alongside the other resources for living, like time and energy and creativity, and to see how a lot of times they interact. So if the law of abundance says that which you give out comes back to you, well, sometimes it doesn't come back in the same form. So I don't think there's any manipulative formula to get money coming back, or if you tithe 10%, that you're going to get 15% magically coming back to you. It may be that if you give of your money, then what comes back is enhanced friendships or enhanced creative energy. So we need to think of abundance in the broadest sense of the word. But when it comes down to money itself, this is in many ways the method by which our society keeps score, keeps track of energy and the movement of energy. And we need to be practical. We need to live in a world that's financial without serving it or becoming compulsive about it. I think sometimes people who are deeply committed to spirituality sort of jump to the conclusion that God's just going to provide the money as long as they have the right intentions. And sometimes we've got to be very practical and wise around these matters and responsible. But also know that there's lots of people in the world that are not only surviving on meager amounts of money, but they're also finding ways to thrive in ways that are more modest than we've convinced ourselves we've got to have.
Yeah, that is the one thing. It really is a state of mind, you know, when it comes down. First of all, you know, the broader definition of abundance, you know, I think, you know, that many people who maybe are having a little bit of deficiency in the actual money area would probably be, you know, served better by recognizing abundance in a broader scale and as far
in a broader
as all
sense,
of the
other yeah.
things. Yeah, in a broader sense. You know, and then that comparison is to what, you know, others are doing with less. You know, I think that's the one thing that I have learned so much by doing the show is just recognizing and being grateful for what I have. And when I'm always hearing about individuals who have much more challenging lives or who have much less than I have. I mean, the end result of always talking to these people is that I end up feeling gratitude, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
grateful for that. And you know, to me that, and once I feel that, then it just seems to create a shift in my state of being. I mean, I'm always much more peaceful, you know, and content, and anything that may have agitated me, you know, before that point seems, you know, minuscule. I mean, it just doesn't compare to what some other people are
That's beautifully stated. Beautifully stated.
Well, thank you. Well, so we're down to the end of the show. So is there any maybe any area or any topic regarding discovering your soul's purpose that we didn't cover that you feel would be really important to be able to talk about or to let readers know about the book?
Yeah. You know, I'd like listeners and readers to consider exploring Edgar Cayce's work a little more. His last name is spelled Cayce, and if you go to the website edgarcayce.org, that's the Association for Research and Enlightenment that he founded 85 years ago, and there's lots of free resources, educational resources there. If a person wanted to become a member of the organization, it gives you access to all of his readings with an online computerized search engine that's really fabulous. So I would encourage people to visit edgarcayce.org. If they want to come to my page, markthurston.com, I periodically send out to folks links to videos of lectures that I've recently done or other things I've written, and I'd be glad to include them in my distribution of these free materials. And I would just encourage people to have a regular meditation practice and also to find like-minded people with whom to build a sense of spiritual community. We need each other to support each other for living our individual soul purposes.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's great. Yeah, that's definitely wonderful to have that resource, to be able to get information from you as you're presenting it. So, I really want to thank you for your time today, Mark. Okay, great. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Mark Thurston. We've been discussing his book, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, Finding Your Path in Life, Work, and Personal Mission, The Edgar Cayce Way. And this is a second edition. It's a really great book. I really enjoyed it, and I know that you will too. You can find out more by visiting Mark's website, which is markthurston.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. And take him up on the offer of getting on that mailing list and getting free information to be able to help you on your soul journey. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.